Right now, speaking about real people, it's time to bring in some real people. It is time to bring in our good friends from the Lakeville Journal and Millerton News. It is time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal. I know we have Patrick at the offices. Good morning, Patrick.
Hello there. It's John Costin.
Oh,
Patrick,
John
is not here today.
You know what? You sounded just like him when I spoke to you on the phone. I apologize, John.
Hello, John, instead of hello, Patrick, then.
Not immensely, but I apologize.
Patrick is off, and well-deserved.
All right, we have Janet Manko with us as well. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. It's nice to be here in the flesh. Real people, sometimes too real.
That's right.
No. There's no
never
thing.
Too real.
Never too real.
Never too real. Well, you know, I have gotten, over the past week, more texts and messages and emails from people bemoaning the fact that Arnold's Garage will no longer do emissions testing.
Yeah.
And people are going to have to find another place to go.
I've got a good business opportunity.
That's right.
It's a big story, though, because...
No, it's huge.
Yeah.
What was the first thing I thought? Anyway, go on.
Well, you know, we are really sorry that they're closing, but you got to give them credit for being there... I think it's 47 years on that corner, and Arnold told me that when he started out, he had $24 in his pocket, and they're having difficulty finding workers who are good mechanics who are in the area, and as everybody knows, there's really a handful of mechanic shops in the northwest corner in his area. And, of course, emissions is another thing altogether. We will be following up with this story to let everybody know where emissions will land.
Yeah, I think you can go to Torrington. I think there's a garage or two in Torrington. I think there might even be one in Goshen from the map that I saw. But that's a big point. But the good thing about this is they're still going to be doing auto body work and also, picking up wrecks and fixing cars like that, just getting out of that other business. You know, John, it goes with everything else. It's hard to find people, qualified people, who want to do something, whether it's a trade, whether you're a retail business, whether you're a restaurant. It's just hard to find workers.
I predict that there will be a time. But, you know, again, if the alternative is sitting at home on your computer trading Bitcoin, you know, what do you think? I'm sorry.
Yes.
But it's just, you know, the whole work ethic thing is a little bit off the agenda.
Yeah, eventually when Bitcoin isn't paying the bills, though, you know,
that's
something's
right.
Got to give.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right.
All right, let's go to the Little Guild's Country Mutt Show, which is once again held this year at Lime Rock. You've got a nice color picture there on the front page.
Yes, we have quite a few really nice pictures that came out of that, and if you click on the story in Tri-Corner News, you will see about four or five more really fun photographs of the event. The executive director of the Little Guild told me yesterday that they had 874 participants and more than 200 dogs. So it was really a big deal at Lime Rock. And I really encourage everybody to go look at Lons Christensen's photos online, because we couldn't fit them all in the paper, and they really warm your heart.
And once again, it shows the benefit of Lime Rock Park. You just have the room to do that. That there's unlimited amount of people and dogs that you could have in the show, and the grounds are now being used that way for a lot of different not-for-profits. So it's good. You've got a nice story by Patrick Sullivan on remembering the legacy of Ed Kirby with the dedication of the field, and a lot of people speaking about a mentor that not only was a coach, a teacher, not only a principal, but also an administrator as an assistant superintendent, and then his history, the geology of this area, the history of this area, an amazing man.
Yes, and Patrick did a great job of covering the event. The event began, you know, on a beautiful day, and there were people out on the new ball field that was dedicated to him doing some batting practice. Steve Blass, of course, class of 1960, a Pittsburgh Pirate, former Pittsburgh Pirate. He spoke. Ed's daughter spoke. His wife wasn't really on the speaker platform, but she did talk to quite a few people. And, yeah, it was definitely a big celebration. And he was a mentor to someone named David Lindsay, who was also a big teacher up there. And unfortunately, he's no longer with us, but there will be a celebration of life for David in July. That's also in the story. So a lot of people are connected to these teachers up there.
I remember David Lindsay extremely well. Not only a great teacher, but a track and field. If you look at the building that houses the separate building over the football field, that has a plaque on in honor of David Lindsay on it. Right there.
And so many people's favorite coach. My daughter's favorite coach. You know.
I've never met a guy who's more easygoing, but yet can get a message across than David Lindsay. Never met anything like it.
Right, and inspired so many kids, yeah. Some of whom may not have thought they wanted to do athletics, but somehow Mr. Lindsay would figure it out and inspire them. He's amazing.
Absolutely. We're very lucky to have the Ed Kirby and David Lindsay. Let's move down below to Twin Lakes. Is this a new invasive water plant?
This is a new discovery in this lake. Yes, it was sort of by happenstance. A fisheries biologist noticed a seed pod on the dock up there, and of course the lake association got right on it, and they have issued an alert for people to just keep an eye out for this potential new invasive weed. It really grows from the base or the bottom of the lake, and it can stretch out 10, 12 feet to the top. It's easily pulled out, but it's a real nasty thing. Once you get started with it and you recognize it, you kind of know you have it. And so the lake is watching it. There is no, I have to caution, there is no definite sense right now that this invasive is in any way taking hold in that lake, but the fact that they found a seed pod up there is troublesome.
It possibly lays the groundwork. You're right for problems in the future. You know, your next story on the front page is a great story because every once in a while an athlete comes through our high school, our system, and when I say an athlete, I mean a true honest to goodness, they pick up a football, they can throw it. They pick up a baseball, they can play it. They want to run, they can run. They want to play hockey, they can play hockey. You're honoring in your story Sydney Sagala, who in her years at the high school was proficient in two sports, soccer and basketball, but also, as we just found out, she's got a Division I spot at Boston College on the basketball court. She won all her races in the state class. That's track. I mean, it's amazing. You know, when you have athletes come through like that, they're one in a generation, really.
Yeah, this is a great story, and I really especially am so proud that the paper can feature young people accomplishing such wonderful things. I mean, she has... not only, as you mentioned, she's earned a spot at Boston College, but she's also just set records right and left. I think her last race, she runs the 100, 200, and 400-meter dash, and I believe she set records in all of them. She's one of 10 mountaineers to have this kind of 1,000-point club membership. So it's just fantastic. I loved also the photo that was on the front page, where she's flat out running in a race, and she's ahead of everybody.
Yeah, I remember Brian Malika was that type of athlete years ago in the late 70s at Housatonic Valley Regional High School. We'll move on to North Canaan. They passed both their budgets, and the mill rate is climbing in North Canaan.
Yes, and I think the big problem, of course, is their allotment or their costs at Region 1. We've written about this before. Their increase is $750,000, and there just isn't any way around that, given the current structure. The town is also, we point out in this story, undergoing a revaluation, so that will hit the 2022 grand list. And I think the effort here was to find money somewhere in the general fund to keep the mill rate increase at 2, try to hold at least somewhat of a limit on it. But this is a story that is kind of not going to go away as costs continue to go up, and we all see inflation not only here locally, but inflation is across the economy.
In Salisbury, the Salisbury Conservation Commission had their first online meeting for the first time on Thursday. It looks like they're going to focus really and study the indexing of the open areas in the town.
Yes, this is great. They've rejuvenated the commission. It was actually established way back in the 70s and has been sort of held together with a few individuals keeping the fires going, but it really hasn't been reinstituted until just lately. So we do a little story about what they're going to focus on, and they now are, along with the Inlands, Wetlands, and Watercourses Commission there, the two primary environmental organizations in the town. So they're really going to update what is called the Natural Resources Inventory. Every town has to do one of those, and it's supposed to be done every 10 years. And Salisbury is now about 3 years behind on that schedule. So you're going to see more on this as it comes up.
All right, Patrick Sullivan's story on the Salisbury Sharon Transfer Station, the food waste diversion program. They're looking to expand that and grow that.
Yes, they're going to add another 280 households who will be able to take part in this expanding food waste diversion program. They can start. It will start really happening in July 1 for the expansion. What surprised me was that there sort of was a waiting list to get on this pilot.
Yeah, I'm on it.
I will move on to a story out of Sharon. And Sharon Now, American Rescue Plan Act funding, you get one half now, and you get another half coming up. Sharon has now spent the first half that $400,000 of the $800,000 allocation, and your story goes over a lot of different places where that money went.
Right. We've been following the ARPA program throughout the towns in the Northwest Corner, and this seemed to be a pretty big deal that they distributed $400,000 over a couple of meetings that were close to each other. And this time they really focused on a range of recipients from local families and small businesses and organizations. So we run through what it is that the Board of Selectmen did to allocate money out to folks. And it definitely is interesting to watch how this unfolds, because there's another, as you point out, another $400,000 still to be distributed across the six towns that we primarily cover. It seems like each town has a little different wrinkle on how they manage this.
Let's move over to Falls Village, because there were offers and arguments. The old firehouse, which is sitting empty now, and it's going to be interesting to see how that all plays out.
Yes, they've been collecting offers and suggestions for how to use it. There's quite a range from somebody who wants to, a woodworker in Sharon who wants to turn it into not only a workspace but a living space. Somebody else who had an idea for office spaces. There are also ideas or offers and suggestions coming over the transom, even as they set various deadlines for submitting, but I think June 21 at 4 o'clock is the final deadline for bids and suggestions. So we will keep an eye on that.
I want to focus in on the story in North Canaan about the hearing on the cannabis moratorium.
Well, that story essentially, it's under the, right now, the auspices of planning and zoning, they held an informational meeting in May, and they are really trying to sort of orient townspeople to understand what is possible. There could be a retail operation of some kind, or there could be a growing operation. There are people in town who see that, or who at least spoke up and said that sales, you know, would be another business in town, and it would possibly, you know, be another source of income, strengthening the retail shop and restaurant base. Others are more concerned about having cannabis in town, but I believe what's really going to end up with a town moratorium on what to do and whether or not to, in fact, have a moratorium, a one-year moratorium, and that vote would come in the fall. So we'll keep an eye on this, but I think it looks to me like what's going to happen is there will be a moratorium, if it goes that way in the vote, for 1 year.
All right. I want to move over to the editorial pages now. We'll get back to Compass. Janet, lacking internet, fight for it. And really some fast-moving things have been happening, especially in the Sharon area, when it comes to internet service.
Right. And it seems fast-moving, you know, when we're looking at it right now, but it's really the result of years of hard work of the Sharon Connect Task Force and Sharon has just been in the forefront of finding ways to try to take action to change what's around them and have internet access for more of their residents, which is so incredibly important. As we learned during the pandemic, those who do not have good internet access are cut off, and in ways that those of us who take it for granted just can't imagine. So we talk about that a bit. And, thanks to the Sharon Connect Task Force for coming up with a plan that would be an alternative to Comcast and Frontier, since they were not taking action to pull internet into the wider areas of the town where people didn't have it. And it really is looking as if just having the alternative in front of them was enough to bring Comcast and Frontier out of their back offices and into the forefront themselves and come up with their own proposals to the town. But now there are options, and so it really does prove that it's worth it to,
Well, I think you're right. The Internet Task Force deserves a lot of credit, and there are options. There's the town-owned system. There's now Comcast and Frontier both say that they want to wire everybody. You have Starlink.
Right.
You know, I've been telling people I was paying almost $365 a month at my house for high-speed internet service and cable service. Well, I cut the cord when I got Starlink. My total monthly bills now are like $185 for the internet service and for the available video services that I've chosen to pick on.
Yeah, and so how has it gone for you? Do you like it?
Perfect.
I guess you do.
There hasn't been a downtime at all. The speed is absolutely phenomenal, and I've got it. I actually have this little dish sitting on my back deck.
Isn't that great? And so, that's another service that Sharon Connect has promoted to everyone in the area.
And I just think that they opened up the options, and now these companies have infrastructure out here, and if they want to be viable, they're going to have to respond.
And it's going to translate to the other towns in the northwest corner in the region. It's something that will affect everyone who does not have access now and has been suffering under that.
Next portion of your editorial on school security.
Right. This is, of course, really an important topic for all of us, but especially the parents, administrators, and children in our schools. And so we're aware that there are those in Region 1 who are really taking a careful look at school security now. You know, the questions have been asked since Columbine, really, but especially since the brutal attack on Sandy Hook Elementary School in Newtown, not so far away from us. And so a local security company did make changes over the past 10 years. Time to look at it again, but we hope that this discussion can take place with mutual respect and open minds.
Yeah, I mean, this is such a, you know, this is a question. School security is almost like gun control. There's not one easy thing you can do. There's obviously going to have to be multiple steps and multiple ways of looking at school security. And you're right, people just have to keep their common sense and their patience and get through it and see what can come up to help the situation.
That's right. And any action taken, you know, it shouldn't be just to make people feel safer, but to be safer. And that is foremost for everyone.
Once again, you got a lot of different letters on a lot of different things.
We do. We do. We have a couple of letters on gun control and violence, and those are from Amy Lake and Sophia DeBoer and Kathy Volstead. Do give those a read. Michael Parmalee from North Canaan writing about the possibility of the marijuana dispensary in North Canaan. And really interesting letter from Edward Faison on clarifying the biodiversity reporting that we have been doing. And so he brings in a different viewpoint. He's an ecologist with a PhD in conservation ecology. And, you know, when John read this, he said, yeah, you know, there are different ways of looking at things. And so this is another view. And so we are so glad to have it and hope he keeps in touch with us that way. We also have a wonderful letter from Eileen Epperson on joy, which came out of Charlie Kelly's letter, and Kathy Harold Marlowe writing about gun violence.
And Compass, well, we've got about 2 minutes here, a nice little story on the Frank Food Company.
Right, which, you know, is great to have in West Cornwall. And so, you know, they were originally in Kent, closed down during the pandemic, and now reopened in what had been the Pink House in West Cornwall. Do give this a read. A really interesting fellow who runs the place and feels deeply about quality food and glad it's there in West Cornwall.
It's the Lakeville Journal and, of course, their co-companion, the Millerton News, available online, tricornernews.com, newsstands, and also home delivery. Guys, have a great week, and we'll speak to you next weekend.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Take care.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye.
Once again, you can find the Lakeville Journal online at tricornernews.com.